Very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's a Friday, which means we have our Friday panel for the next hour. We'll introduce you to those in just a few moments' time. Later in the show, Seamus Gunn is going to be here discussing legal issues and taking some of your legal questions. And the final hour of the show, given over to culture and entertainment, we'll have Michael and we will have Katie in studio with us to discuss some of the offerings available on our big screens, our small screens, and in the theatre as well. So do stick around for that. Friday's always a day I enjoy doing the programme. And it isn't the one I get to do on a Friday very often, because I know Greg loves his Fridays as well. But Greg, as I was saying, was Lee on a very important mission today on the way down to Kilkenny for the IMRO Radio Awards, and hopefully be bringing back some really good news over the course of the weekend. But if you want to get in touch with the programme, of course, you can take part in this discussion. You can text or WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000. You can call us on 074 91 25000, 00353 74 91 25000, if you're outside of the dialing area. And as well, of course, you can use social media. We're at Highland Radio on X, we're Highland Hub on Facebook, and you can email comments at highlandradio.com. Let's introduce you to our panel this morning and go over to our Zoom feed. We have three highly articulate and erudite panellists this morning. We're joined by Councillor Kieran Brogan. He's a Fianna Fáil councillor in Donegal. He's also chair of the HSC Regional Health Forum West. Kieran, very good morning to you, and you're welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Donald. Good morning, Marion, and good morning to
Breed Curran is the third panelist. Breed, a solicitor, no stranger to the programme. And Breed, a very good morning to you.
Morning, Donald, and good morning, panel.
And Deputy Marion Harkin, independent representative for the Sligo Leitrim and South Donegal area, recently confirming that she will be seeking to retain her seat and will be contesting the forthcoming election, whether it be next month, as a lot of us expect, or whether it be in February. Marion Harkin, you're very, very welcome.
Good morning, Donald. And you've set a very high bar for us. You said we're highly articulate and erudite.
So absolutely. And I have every...
Kieran and Breed.
I have every faith that that's the way it's going to pan out. I think this morning, in fairness, given the headlines in the political world this morning, there's only one place to start, and that's with the sad passing yesterday of Mary O'Rourke at the age of 87, a former minister. Any of us of a certain age will well remember Mary O'Rourke's performances in and out of the Dáil Chamber. Marion, if I'm correct, I don't think you ever served with her in the Dáil, but you certainly would have been an MEP when she was a representative for Roscommon. That would have been within your constituency.
Yes, I never served with Mary. First of all, sincere sympathy to her family, to her friends on Mary's passing. Mary was larger than life. I knew Mary as most people knew her. I didn't know her personally. I met her a few times, but it was just in passing. And whenever I spoke to her, she was a real politician. You got the sense that Mary knew what she was at. She was, I think, dubbed Mammy by those close to her politically and otherwise, in the sense that I think she looked after people and that she looked out for people, and also that she had that awareness as an older woman sometimes has, often has, of life and of living and of looking at what's important. And you don't get that title without it being deserved. And it was a title that was given to her that was given, I think, with affection and with respect. So that says a lot in itself, because Mammy is a word all of us have used at some time, or most of us at least. And it's always a positive for a good term. But I didn't know her personally, but just from somebody watching what was going on, Mary O'Rourke was certainly a trailblazer for women in politics. While she did come from a political family, nonetheless, she did blaze that trail. And I saw last night somebody speaking about her, and they said something which impressed me. And I suppose it impressed me partly because it re-echoed some of how I change my opinions. Somebody once asked her about, you know, women in politics and do we need a quota? And Mary said at that time, no, they didn't. And actually, that was my feeling as well. But then she said, subsequently, when she looked at how the system worked, she did agree that quotas were needed. And I actually came to the same conclusion myself when I was in the system and I saw how it worked. She was certainly a real figure, an endearing figure, but a very strong figure and a woman you wouldn't mess with. And from what I see and hear, a beloved figure in Irish politics. So God rest you, Mary. And as I said, sympathies to her friends and family. A life well lived. At the end of the day,
absolutely,
you can't ask for more than that.
And like any good mammy, she cared and she nurtured and she looked after her constituents and did so very, very well. But there was no doubt if anyone needed a good stern talking to, mammy is the one to give it. And Mary That's O'Rourke it. Was very good at that. Kieran Brogan, I'm sure the entire Fianna Fáil family is feeling this loss this morning.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Mary is somebody who I've had the opportunity in the past to meet a few times. I would know her son, Angus, and I met him just a few weeks ago. Look, they're a family who's been steeped in politics right back to the Sean Lamass days, the Lenehan family. They've given an awful lot to public life. But I think Marion is right. I think if there's one quote that stuck out for me yesterday evening when I was reading all the different contributions was that Mary was a force to be reckoned with. And I think that's a fair good contribution because she was very passionate, as all the Lenehans were about their politics. The Lenehans were very passionate about the Ireland that they wanted to see. And I think Mary was part of that journey. And I think, you know, she put her own stamp in politics going into Leinster House, probably at a time when it wasn't simple, when it was male dominated. And I think Mary definitely put her stamp on that in her own way. And she was happy and enjoyed bringing other people with her. And I think, thankfully, things have changed. There's a lot more women now in politics today. But I think Mary went in at a time when it wasn't easy. Nevertheless, she was very, very passionate about everything that she wanted to see achieved, and she achieved an awful lot, and she probably helped shape the Ireland that we have today, and from a teaching background as well, and she had that natural way of being able to interact with children, interact with middle-aged and elderly people, and I think that's reflected on her family too, anyone who would know them. They're very, very passionate about it. She's a huge loss to the Fianna Fáil party, but more so the Lenehan and O'Rourke family. So our thoughts and prayers and Fianna Fáil and Donegal is with them all at this time.
Bree Curran, from your point of view, you're a little younger than some of the panellists and certainly than the presenter, but I'm sure the personage of Mary O'Rourke is one that you would have been aware of as you grew up. She was one of those people who, even if you didn't
Absolutely.
Have an interest in politics, you knew who she was.
I knew Mary very well because she was in the next door constituency. I actually live in Galway, so I'm in the Galway-Roscommon constituency. And Mary had persuaded me in 2011 to give her a hand one Saturday canvassing in Athlone with her. Now, 2011, for those who remember, was a very, very difficult election for Fianna Fáil. I was in a housing estate in Athlone, and she was coming behind me, and I'd knocked on a door, and two very, very nice men came to the door. One man who I actually knew, and I knew that he was a card-carrying member of Fianna Fáil. Well, I'm not a member of Fianna Fáil myself. I was doing Mary a favour, canvassing with her that day. And he came to the door, and he was been very honest with me, and he said to me, in all honesty, I cannot vote for Fianna Fáil this time round. He said, what they've done, it just doesn't sit well with me. And I thought, God, I better get Mary over here and see if I can try and change this man's mind. So she bustled over and I introduced and I said, Mary, this man is having second thoughts about, oh, not at all, she said, not at all. And like a real mammy, as Marion has said, she started giving out to him. And by the time she was finished with him, he was in a hoop and he didn't know which end of him was up. And I think he was kind of glad to close the door after having promised that he was definitely going to change his mind and continue a long-held tradition and vote for Fianna Fáil. But nobody could give out to you like Mary O'Rourke. And nobody could get away with it like Mary O'Rourke. I won't repeat the language that was used on the particular day because it's a family show, but nobody could get away with it like Mary could. She was a force to be reckoned with. She was very, very astute politically. She knew exactly what was going on. She could read the room. She could read the nation like nobody else. And she would be a huge loss and a huge vacuum in political life.
That's actually a nice, handy way to segue in, into our first actual topic for the panel this week, which is, of course, the budget that's just been presented by Minister Jack Chambers and by Minister Pascal Donoghue. Now, when you look back, as you said, to those days of 2011, when Fianna Fáil, we'd just come out of the EMF and the Troika and all that, and the economy was in tatters, and the basic perceived wisdom then was Fianna Fáil was a busted flush, Fianna Fáil was never going to get anywhere in politics ever, ever again. Fianna Fáil was finished. Here we are 14 years later, and a budget's been presented by a Fianna Fáil finance minister, potentially a leader in waiting of Fianna Fáil, potentially a Taoiseach in waiting, and Fianna Fáil in government with Fine Gael, now hoping to return to government after an election which we believe to be imminent. So let's go to that budget, and let's talk about that budget. And Kieran Brogan, I want to bring you in first. You'll be expected, possibly in a matter of weeks, to be knocking on doors and campaigning for Fianna Fáil, asking people to give Fianna Fáil a vote, give it to Charlie McConnell, give it to Pat the Cope Gallagher. The question that now faces you and your colleagues in Fianna Fáil is this a budget you can sell on the doorsteps?
Absolutely, no doubt. First of all, I want to pay tribute to Jack Chambers. I think he's an excellent public representative, and for us in Fianna Fáil, we're delighted that someone of the calibre of Jack Chambers is actually Minister for Finance. He's a very fine minister, and he's been here in Letterkenny and in Donegal on numerous occasions. He's somebody that listens, he's somebody that cares, and he's somebody that's very passionate about shaping the politics towards the needs of the people, and I think that's important. He was only in Letterkenny just over a week ago at the official opening of Fintru and the announcement of the jobs there, and he's somebody who's travelled the length and breadth of this country addressing and listening to the needs of the people. And I think the one thing, you could go into many different parts of this budget, but I think, to be fair, it's a very fair budget. There's a lot of people who will see their lives improved by the budget. And I think when one hears so much talk about a budget, you can go into the figures and you get lost in numbers and stuff. But I think most people will know that, well, you know, how will the budget affect me? First of all, the country is in a very good financial situation at the moment. We have a lot more coming in than what's going out, and I think that's important. We have moved on from the very harrowing times that we had 15 years ago or less. We are in a position to invest huge monies into our education, into our health. People who work in the services, cares and stuff. So there's an awful lot of money going in there to our infrastructure as well, our housing and our roads. And I think at the end of the day, the implications will be at the end of the day is how everyone sees themselves faring out of this budget. Am I much better off out of this? I think everyone will be better off in this budget without getting into the detail of it. And I think it's about us investing in our people. And I think we're doing that, particularly in the whole area of education, and invest in our health service as well. I don't think we've ever seen as much funding going into those areas. And I think that's very, very important.
Potentially one of the issues, though, is that we all know that over the course of the next couple of weeks, we'll be getting energy payments and parents will be getting extra children's allowance. And there's going to be a lot coming to us over the next couple of weeks. And that intended, I'm sure, to ensure that we all feel very well disposed toward the government when we go into polling booths, whenever we go in, be it next month or as we said, be it February. But one of the issues that some people have identified is there's not a lot of long-term in the budget that's concrete. There's a lot of aspirational references to infrastructure. There's aspirational references of using the Apple money, for instance, using the money from the sale of bank shares to do major infrastructural projects in the future. But there's very little flesh on those bones. There's very little detail of what's actually going to happen.
I think if you look at the one-off payments, and we've seen a lot of that in the last 12 months, and I think they've taken huge pressure off many individuals and families. You know, the once-off energy credits, the double child benefit payment, the two double payments now that have been paid out in October, the €400 lump sum. You know, there's an awful lot of €300 fuel allowance, the €200 living alone allowance, the €100 once-off payment, you know, the baby barn, baby grant. You know, I think there's an awful lot of once-off payments there that's aimed to take the pressure off people immediately. And maybe in the past we've had budgets who maybe didn't come into effect until May or June of next year. I think these immediate payments will be a huge benefit to many people. The extension of the free books scheme, it's all about improving the situation of the family in whatever way it will, whether that's the free school meals, whether it's the free school books. And I think there's an awful lot there for everyone in this whole area.
Marion Harkin, you've been sitting in the Dáil, you've contributed to the budget debate, you've listened to the speeches, and you've been crunching the numbers yourself and doing so forensically, I'm sure. What's your take on Budget 2025? Is this prudent management of the economy, or is this basically a very, very expensive election manifesto on behalf of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael?
Well, first of all, let's accept this is an election budget. Nobody pretends otherwise. So that's fine. And look, to be fair about these things, you know, we were talking about an earlier election when Fianna Fáil were in trouble, and that was because of what happened in the crash in 2008. So to be fair, if a government or a party suffers because there's an economic downturn, you have to accept that when there's an economic upturn and that party are in power, that they at least have some influence on it. And I try to be fair in my assessment about it. And there's lots of positive things in this budget. As Kieran said, there's lots of short-term measures. I was pleased to see, for example, that carers allowance is now a payment that is linked to fuel allowance. And there were a number of other issues that I had campaigned on that were certainly seemed to come to fruition in this budget. However, overnight, after the budget was announced, and there's a lot of very positive stuff in it for the next 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. And that's what matters to people, because people live day to day. How much money do I have in my back pocket? But I think as politicians, we also cannot say that we're just not going to get lost in numbers. We have to look at the numbers. We have to see what do the numbers tell us in the medium to longer term. And if you look at the analysis from the Parliament, that's the Dáil, its own budget office, they tell us that they took 5 social welfare payments over the last 5 years, 5 budgets from this government. And what they tell us is that the contributory state pension over those 5 years, in real terms, in other words, when you take inflation into account, it fell by 2.6%, and non-contributory fell by 1.8%. Now, 2 payments, widow's pension and working age supports, increased by nearly 1%. But the big one for me was that carers allowance in real terms fell by 0.4% over the past 5 years. So if you look at the impact over the last 5 years, you see that some of those social welfare payments, while we've got the one-offs, and of course, people are delighted to get a double payment or an extra payment. And as I said, let's not quibble. This is an election budget. But you do need to look at the overall and see how it affects people day to day. And while there are many good things in this budget, and I spoke about that in Leinster House, I also looked at some of those things that are not. And I just mention one because I know we probably have a second round on this. But for me, one of the big impacts, immediate impacts of this budget is that the cost of business, whatever business you're in, has increased. And most people think of business as big business, as multinationals, as corporations. But in truth, most of the business in this country is small business, not even medium business, small. And the impact on small business of this budget has been really tough. And many of them, whether they're in childcare or in serving your local cafe or restaurant or whatever, are hit badly by this budget and are certainly reassessing whether they're...
And I do want to come back to you on that, yes. But I want to go for a moment to Breach Kern. Breach, as you say, you're not a card-carrying member of any particular party. You may have done some canvassing in the past as a favour, but you're not a card-carrying member of a party. So as someone who is looking at this budget from an independent view as such, what's your take on Budget 2025?
How can you tell an election is coming around the corner when you look at a budget that we've had this week? It's like one for everybody in the audience, and maybe not so much one for everybody in the audience, but something for everybody that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and the Green Party are hoping will vote. It's a very, very short-term, short-sighted budget. It is not a good idea to splurge once-off cash payments. It's not a good use of public money. The old adage, it's the economy, stupid, it's how you make people feel. It's going to be very, very easy for anybody canvassing for the three government parties to stand on a doorstep and say, look at all the money we've given you, we've helped you with your ESB bill. But the problem in this country is this: housing, water infrastructure, education and small businesses. Those are the four key areas. The short-sightedness of the failure to deal with the 9% VAT reduction that all our restaurants and hospitality businesses are crying out for. There are restaurants and businesses closing in this country every single day of the week because they cannot cope with the rising cost of doing business in this country. And every single one of those little businesses that closes takes three or four jobs with it. And that the trickle-down economy is failing. And I think that's the main issue that I have with this budget is it's far too short-sighted. We need to be pumping money into housing, we need to be pumping money into water infrastructure, and we need to be pumping money into education and supporting those small businesses. The Irish Fiscal Authority this week came out and said pumping billions into an economy when it's at full employment, it just repeats past mistakes. And this government, while they're killed out commissioning reports on absolutely everything, saying that they're using these reports to learn lessons, they've learned absolutely nothing. This is the great giveaway budget. What they're hoping is, of course, that giving money to the electorate months before an election is going to guarantee that they're going to get back into power. Well, let me tell you, it doesn't guarantee anything. But the problem is it doesn't do any harm because it's going to be much easier to canvass on the doorsteps when people have money in their pockets. But in 2, 3, 4 years time, when we have housing at homelessness at peak levels, when our water infrastructure is dying on its feet, when our schools are not coping, when we have parents out doing churchgate collections so that they can pay bills in schools, that's when we can remind our politicians that all this money, all these surpluses that they had, what they were doing was they were buying the electorate. That's, in my opinion, that's exactly what this budget did.
And Kieran Brogan, going back to you briefly, does that not maybe speak to the point that I raised with you in terms of when you look at things like infrastructure, where you have woolly promises, we don't have a lot of meat on those bones. And they are things like investing in water infrastructure so that if someone goes to build houses, we know that the infrastructure and the pipes and the supply is going to be there to allow those houses to function, because we're hearing a lot from developers at the moment, and you know a lot about this yourself, I'm sure, that one of the problems you have is you try to build, but can you get water in? Can you get power in? Can you get the basic services you need in? And I know that the developers are charged development charges, but I mean, we're told so much about it costing tens of thousands to hook up one house for water. I mean, are we at the point where we're going to see housing developments stymied and potentially compromised because the infrastructure isn't there?
I think infrastructure was always going to be a challenge, and there is a huge investment going into Irish Water, into housing and into roads. And I think, you know, in the words of Tip O'Neill, all politics is local. We've seen works now being completed in the Milford Rathmull and Remelton area, an investment by Irish Water of over 50 million. Albeit that work was needed for a long, long time, but the work is now almost completed in that area. It's a huge investment. We've seen huge investment in the area in Trent of Irish Water. We've seen huge investment out in Rathbracken and Manor Cunningham, where we've had many issues over the years. And indeed, we have huge issues in the southern Letterkenny area of New Mills and Balmany as well that needs investment immediately. We will always need investment, but I think we need to acknowledge when there is investment as well. And I mean, the infrastructure in the northwest, if you like, the biggest challenges we've seen over the last number of years is the access to the northwest. And we've seen recently at Cabinet the TEN-T that has been ongoing, which includes the Stirban to Manor Cunningham, the Ballybuffet, Stirnorler Bypass, the Bunagee Link, that whole new TEN-T project being approved at Cabinet, which is a huge statement by government.
But we still don't have a timetable.
That project. And this week, when we've seen the Northern Ireland Executive approve the A5, in which the Irish government has committed $600 million to that project. So, I mean, I've never seen as much capital investment going into infrastructure in this area. And when one talks about schools, I mean, locally, we've seen the approval of the new school for Errigal College. We've seen the work ongoing in the new school for the three school campuses in Buncrana. We've seen the works completed in Moville. We've seen huge work being completed in St. Arthur. And Letterkenny here local, we've seen huge investment in different schools in the area, and we're going to see more in the future. So I've never in my lifetime seen as much investment in the schools and the transport, and albeit a lot of it was waiting for a long time, but I've never seen as much happening. And I suppose the challenge that I see over the last number of years is actually getting to the stage where we can make things happen.
But yeah, and that is the question, because we are at the point at the moment where we absolutely have the promise. The Cabinet has approved the 10T. There are amazing plans on the 10T, but you're talking a project that's going to take years to deliver, but what we don't have is a start date. Now, people will talk about projects being shovel ready, and things like the 10T are far from being shovel ready, and really that's going to be the litmus test of this. Just a few of your comments. A pure cut of a budget. We're the only country in the world where you get awarded for not working. What about those on illness 6 months or more get nothing? People are sick and are just entitled to bonuses as people that are on job seekers. Is the Bonnaghy Bridge getting done with all the billions we have? Probably won't see any of the big money up here. Rather get the bridge or targeted increases for people with disabilities than get a few short-term bonuses. Another caller says, for God's sake, abolish the means test for the carers. It's saving the state a fortune. A caller says, I work in a school. We were allocated €105,000 for school meals. In my opinion, not one child in that school is in need of that free meal. It's a shocking waste of money that could have been used in a better way. Another caller says, I will never vote Fianna Fáil again. €9 million for cases for a phone. Every school has a locker. Just enforce the rules that are there. Kieran says, great budget to take the pressure off families. Pressure which the government put on people trying to buy votes by squandering more than they give out. Another caller says, may Mary O'Rourke rest in peace, a great public figure. But what would Mary think about her party now joined up with Fine Gael? They sold out their supporters just to get into government because they failed and couldn't do it on their own. So says Tony. I don't know. I'm not going to put words in Mary O'Rourke's mouth. But I mean, one of the words that comes to my mind when I think of Mary O'Rourke is that she was a pragmatist. And I think Mary O'Rourke would take a very, very pragmatic view on issues like that. Caller says, nothing in place for housing when there's a surplus. It's baffling. Another caller says, Kieran says it was a great budget. It was for anyone who doesn't work. The working man gained nothing. An electric allowance, big deal, so says a caller. Now, Marion Harkin, I do want to go back to you because, and this was sort of touched on by Breege as well, in terms of the pressures being put on business, and one of the things when you get to the budget and you see announcements like increases in minimum wage, increases in sick in pay entitlements, increases in sick leave entitlements, and a government minister announces those and we all think, yeah, that's great, the government is giving us X, Y and Z. But in these cases, it's not the government that's giving it, because in these cases, the pressure to pay the increased minimum wage is going to fall on the small business owner that you referred to earlier.
That is precisely it. I couldn't put it better myself. And can I just make one comment? We often hear about what the government is giving us. Let us understand one thing. This is our money. It's not as if a government minister puts their hands in their back pocket and say, oh, I'm giving you this. This is our money. Their responsibility is how they spend it. And that's why we elect people. And so that needs to be very clear first. It's not as if we have a benevolent government overlooking us and handing money to us. This is about managing our economy, managing the wealth that every citizen in this country generates. And coming back to you about that particular point, of course, everyone, including myself, so I'm not leaving myself outside this, welcomes increase in minimum wage. We welcome auto-enrollment because that's for workers, because that's really important. That protects workers in the long term. So from that perspective, the government is doing good work, absolutely. But the question is, who pays for that? And the answer is, it's business. And often when people think of business, they think of big business, they think of multinational corporations. But, you know, as I've said many times, most of the businesses in this country are small business. And they have a profit margin because they couldn't operate if they didn't. They couldn't pay their staff if they didn't. But when that is squeezed without support for those businesses, you have ministers getting up and saying, and it's the one payment that has increased significantly in the last 5 years. The only one is the minimum wage. It's increased in 5 years by over 13%, which is great. But who pays it? Small business pays it. Big business, but mostly small. So therefore, the question is, How can they pay that if they're continually squeezed, not just by that, but by so many other changes? And one example is the failure to reinstate the 9% VAT rate on food and hospitality businesses. And it's, to me, one of the issues there is not just about keeping those businesses open, though that's crucial. It's about the fact that most of those businesses, if not nearly all, are Irish-owned, are small, use local produce, are sort of nearly part of their community. And some of them, and I hate to say it, maybe many of them, will close because they are retaining an exorbitant rate of 13.5% VAT, which is one of the highest in Europe. And what that means is it won't mean that people can't go into a restaurant or a cafe. Of course, some of the big chains will come in, they'll open up, and they'll be able to service us in some way. But sure, that'll be the same as going anywhere else in the world where there are big chains. If we want to maintain Indigenous Irish industry with Irish chefs and Irish input into this, something that's unique, not saying that we can't have the other. The other will be, the chains will be there anywhere. But it's that we're losing all of that. And for me, and I'll finish with this because I've spoken for a couple of minutes extra here, is that this isn't just happening in the food industry. I see it happening, for example, in childcare, where small providers, family providers are closing. I see it happening in elder care, where the smaller providers are closing. And yes, some of the bigger chains are coming in, but they're only in the large towns and cities. And for me, that is a huge issue. And I know it's long term, and I know it doesn't affect people today or tomorrow, but it changes the society we're living in. And that is down to government policy. And personally, I do not like it.
Breach Curran, going back to yourself, and you were speaking earlier about business too and the pressure businesses are being put under. And I get the impression that to a large extent you and Marion are coming from the same place on that.
Very much so. I am a sole practitioner. I employ 4 part-time staff. The pressure on small businesses is not to be underestimated. It's a constant battle to try and keep costs down, to try and look after your staff. I can only imagine what it's like in the food and hospitality industry. It's just a thankless job at the minute, the cost going up, up, up all the time. And yet you can't pass on those costs to your customers, because if you do, you're out of business, because I mean, it's never increasing circles. I just think that there was a huge opportunity missed by this government, in particular with regards to the 9% VAT rate. And I think things are just going to get worse for small businesses in this country. The auto enrollment is all very, very well, but as Marion has said, it all falls back on the employer. And if we put so many obstacles in the way of employers or possible employers, we're going to find that nobody's going to want to take that risk of opening their own business. We're going to almost stunt entrepreneurship in this country. And we're going to then look back and say, well, where did it all go wrong? Mm. It went wrong because government didn't support small businesses. And that's the crux of the matter.
I want to ask each of you about an issue that's much in the news at the moment, and it's being discussed an awful lot, particularly over the past 36 hours or so. And that's the proposal to spend 9 million euro nationally on a pilot project to provide magnetized pouches for mobile phones in schools. The idea is student goes to school, they put their phone into a pouch, the pouch is sealed, the phone can't be used, and then the pouch is opened when they leave school and they take the phone home, and they don't get to use their phones during class. And in as briefly as possible, and I see I have you in front of me, Bridget, I'll go back to you on this one straight away. I mean, is this a waste of money, or is this forward thinking and necessary given the ubiquitousness of phones now among students?
Okay. Well, let's look at the government's point of view. The government is saying that this is a way to support positive well-being. From my point of view, it's a complete waste of taxpayers' money. In this country, I don't know, between children's hospitals and bike sheds, we can't seem to get value for money. It's almost as if there's no accountability. The Controller and Auditor General brings out a report every year, we sit around and we tut-tut about the price of this and the price of that, and yet we do nothing about it. I mean, you know, when they're looking for your votes in the next couple of months or whenever they decide to call an election, I'd like to sit somebody down and say, can you stand over spending, you know, 9 million on doing something for children's positive mental health that involves buying magnetised pouches? There should be a blanket ban. Schools should impose a blanket ban. It should come from the Minister for Education. No mobile phone during school hours. Leave them at home. You don't need a magnetised pouch to remove a phone from a child. You just have a blanket ban. My very clever 20-year-old daughter has told me that there are certain people that she knows in schools at the moment who know how to get around demagnetising the magnified pouches so that the children can get, you know, I mean, it's laughable. My preference would be to have taken that 9 million euro and to pump it into children's mental health projects and services instead of this nonsense that they're going on about. There's no accountability. It's a complete waste of money. And it's just, I mean, while I did pass maths with the leave insert, you could buy 26 bike sheds at a cost of €335,000 for now.
Marion Harkin, from your point of view,
€9 million.
Yeah.
That they're spending those pouches. But that's just me being cynical. It's just a complete waste of money. There's no accountability, and there has to be accountability.
Breach, to be honest, you've just taken the words out of my mouth, because my next sentence was going to be very cleverly to say, well, it would have bought 25 bike sheds. But Marion, I want to go to you on this particular one.
Actually, 26.8.
Oh, 26.8, fair play. I did pass maths too, but yours is obviously better than mine. I made it at about 25 point whatever. But Marion, if I can go to you very briefly.
I had Coleman Lee in the Abbey Vocational School. He'd be very proud of me.
Marion, your take on the 9 million?
Look, it's not that we don't want to see mobile phones are not used in classrooms. So the principle of it is good. Mobile phones should not be part of the school day. But it's how you do it. And I think that's what seems to underlie a lot of what's going on now. And Breed actually has expressed my view better than I could myself about, you know, people need to see, coming back to what I said earlier, it's our money. It's taxpayers' money. It's not government money. The only responsibility any minister has is to spend it well. It's not to boast about how much, because it's only how much, because people pay tax or... So it's how it's spent. Is this value for money? Is this achieving the outcomes? When any person sits down to look at what comes into their house and what goes out, they don't look about, oh, I have so many euro to spend, so we'll spend it all on one thing or whatever. So it's just, I think it's not value for money. It's not, any politician can say, of course, children's mental health, of course, their school day is sacrosanct. We all agree with that. But it's how the money that's available for education is spent. And for me, from speaking to school principals and to teachers over the last number of years, schools in particular, some primary schools, are absolutely starved of capitation grants. Let's be clear. We have the highest pupil-teacher ratio in all of Europe. Now, would it not be better investing that kind of money in making sure that there was a lower pupil-teacher ratio so that our students would have more class time, more face time with their teachers, and particularly those who need it most? And there's many other pockets where this kind of money could have been spent. So the question is, not so much that we have this money to spend. We have this money because people pay their taxes, so it's therefore at the disposal of the minister. The question is this the best way to spend it? And honestly, I think it's not. It's not that we don't want students to have mobile phones in schools. We don't. I know many schools who have a blanket ban, who enforce it without any pouches. And I'm already seeing on social media that one of the challenges will now be how to override it, how to make sure.
And
that
from what Breed's daughter is saying, it's been done already. Kieran Brogan, yep. I want to go to you because Albert Reynolds once said that it's the small stuff that trips you up. And is this 9 million potentially a small thing that's potentially going to trip Fianna Fáil up?
Yeah. Donal, if you'd allow me, can I just go back to the business discussion, because you didn't give me the opportunity to discuss that, and it'd be remiss of me as someone who's in business here at the Coalface of Business not to make a contribution on that. And I think that we've heard a lot of discussion about small businesses and business going out of business and stuff. Look, we have a family business here in Letterkenny, family businesses in Letterkenny, and I think there's no government in the history of the state has done more to support the businesses throughout the whole COVID pandemic, and since that as well. There's an awful lot of supports out there and have been, and now we have again in this budget the new Power Up grant as well of 4,000 for retail and hospitality. There's an awful lot of supports available, and maybe some businesses need to just follow that up and go and get them, because during the last number of years, Donal, even up for last year, there has been huge supports for business as well. And sometimes I wonder about some of the commentary around the business, about people making the comments that maybe know enough about business. I'm at the coalface of business, and I think the most important thing for business is to make sure that that government of the day have enough disposable income so that people have a spend and the economy is good. And I think that's very important for us. The economy is good. Business is challenging today, but it has always been challenging. And I think that we've been resilient people and we've worked through that in the past. But I think it'd be remiss of me not to acknowledge the huge supports by this government over the last number of years for many businesses, large, small, medium. And I think it's important that I would just make that point.
And on the phones, very briefly, if you would, your take on the 9 million?
Yeah, on the phones, and believe it or not, I'm not going to go for the sound bites of the headlines. I'm going to say that I have great admiration for Minister Norma Foley, and by her bringing about this initiative, I think it's very courageous of her. I think it's obvious that it's a huge challenge. And I have two children myself, two teenagers. They're not children anymore, but I know I watched the engagement. And for her to be honest about it, we're all guilty of it. I'm guilty of it. Donal, you're guilty of it. We're all guilty at council meetings. And we're all guilty in our own environment of spending too much time on the phone. Is it a distraction? Absolutely. It has become a huge distraction. Is it a problem in schools? It's a huge problem in schools. I've listened to Breed, and she says about leaving the phone at home. It's not that simple. I know my daughter or son couldn't leave the phone at school because they have to text their mum or they have to call their mum. So I think this initiative is very, very courageous. And the scale of the overall budget that we have, I think it's $25 billion that's going into education in total. I think this is somebody who's trying to bring about a change, trying to bring about change in the habits or the trends that's there. There's huge issues around the effects of people's mental health with phones in schools. And I know, you know, from being locally here in Letterkenny, there is issues in some of the schools around the phones and having to go and sign your phone in when you're going to the toilet, if you leave it there and come back. So I think it's easy to get a headline at times like this. I commend the minister for being courageous here if she wants to bring about change in this, because it's only, I'm told, €20 per pouch, if that's what we're told. And, you know, I think there's a bigger discussion around this. You know, we're talking about business, and I've heard a lot of discussion around business. Believe it or not, to be honest, it's a huge problem in business as well.
Yeah. At this point, I'm going to talk across the here, I'm afraid. I do have to go for a break, and we'll be back after these. Time has pretty much caught up with us, actually. It's just 2 minutes or so to go before we have to say goodbye to the panel. I want to give a very brief final word to each of you, and I'm going to ask each of you, just in about 45 seconds, if you could, your final thoughts. We've been discussing the budget, business. Are you confident? Are you not confident? In 45 seconds, in your view, where do we go from here? Kieran Brogan, starting with you.
Overall, I think it's been a very good budget. You're always going to have people to find fault with the budget, and maybe that's the world we live in, and that's good. And I think it's important at the same time, if people have alternative solutions, it's important as well, because we hear far too much negativity and far too many sound bites and headlines. I think we need to have more substance rather than sound bites. I think a lot of good work has gone into trying to improve the country we live in, but improve the country for the people that we live in. I think elderly people in particular have come out well with this budget. But the first time in many years, working people, and I've heard some comments by some people saying that this budget is only for people who's not working. That's not true. I think there's a lot of benefits for people that are working. It's been rewarding over the last number of budgets for people that are working. So all in all, hopefully it's a good work, and I just want to, I suppose, pay tribute to people at it. There'll always be challenges, and I think that's good. But I think at the end of the day, politics is about people, and it's up to us as politicians to try and shape the policy towards the needs of the people and improve the lives they live.
Thank you, Kieran. Breach Curran?
I think there was a huge opportunity missed in the budget by this government, far too short-sighted, throwing money at voters rather than constituents, very, very little for self-employed and business people. And I wonder about the fuss and furore over, for example, the 9 million. What else is that hiding and masquerading? I'm very cynical when it comes to politicians. I think that it's kind of like distract us with all this nonsense about 9 million. What else in the budget have we missed? What else is going to impact on us in the next 12 months? I just think it was a huge opportunity missed.
And Marion Harkin, finally, last word to yourself.
Look, because we had so much money in this budget, because the government had so much money at its disposal, obviously, a lot of people will be reasonably satisfied in the short term with what's coming their way. But I suppose it's our responsibility as politicians to look more to the long term. I agree with Kieran. During COVID, there was lots of supports from the government, but we have to move on. They've now put a huge burden on small business and claiming credit for the outcomes, but they must support small business for that. As far as agriculture is concerned, it was a sort of a, like they were a distant relative. It didn't have much to do with them. There were some good things in there, but nothing long term. But crucially for me, the whole issue of balanced regional development, of trying to close the gap between the northern and western region and other regions, was not addressed in this budget. Just one figure. 11% of all the new builds were in this region in 2023. We have 17% population. So when I hear ministers talking about money being spent for housing, I say, great, but where is it being spent?
And we're going to get back to that topic in future discussions, Marion. I really do have to cut it off. Deputy Marion Harkin, Councillor Kieran Brogan and Breed Current Solicitor, our Friday panel.